Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today on the show, we're talking about aches and pains and zeroing in on your hands and your wrists with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to have you back.
It's great to be here.
And Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, good to see your smiling face. Thanks
good
for joining
morning.
Us.
Good morning. Good morning. It's great to be here.
So as we listen to these two experts, I hope you'll join in with your questions. What kind of hand or wrist pain are you having? Do you need advice from a physical therapist? Join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's start by talking about frequency of this. How often do you see hand and wrist related aches and pains in your patients? Jill, maybe you first.
Sure. Well, first of all, hand and wrist pain can be seen either by a physical therapist or an occupational therapist who specializes in the upper quarter, upper extremity. There is something called a certified hand therapist, and that can be either a physical therapist or an occupational therapist. So knowing that that individual with hand or wrist pain can go to either population is something you should consider. So I would say in my population, it's not a very large percentage, maybe 10 to 15%. And the important thing to tease out with people with hand and wrist pain is where the origin of their pain is. That is really important because neck pain can manifest in the wrist and hand. So just saying the percentage is kind of a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah. Lori, any extra comment on that?
Yeah, we see patients here typically not for primary wrist and hand pain, but often wrist and hand pain goes along with other multi-joint problems that people have. They come in with shoulder problems or elbow problems or neck problems, and they also have a wrist and hand problem. So, you know, the farther away you get from the cervical spine, the harder it is to figure out the origin of the pain. Is it primarily at the wrist and hand? Is it coming from the elbow? Is it something entrapped at the shoulder or the neck? So the differential diagnosis becomes important.
Well, I know one of the common problems that we've heard about on the show is carpal tunnel syndrome. Maybe talk about that a little bit. Jill, do you want to pipe in?
Sure. Well, carpal tunnel syndrome is a relatively common upper extremity musculoskeletal overuse syndrome that we do see that is seen in the healthcare system. And as a physical therapist, one of the wonderful things that the orthopedic and sports academies have done within the APTA, the American Physical Therapy Association, they've developed something called clinical practice guidelines. And what they did is they've recruited the experts in our profession to scour the data for us and come up with very helpful recommendations that as a physical therapist, I now know the assessments that are the most helpful or beneficial to do and the most beneficial treatments to do. And in this case, for somebody with carpal tunnel syndrome. And so what they've done, they've outlined very nicely, when I have a patient that comes in with suspected carpal tunnel syndrome, the tests and measures that I should do to help me rule in that condition. and they've also made recommendations regarding a couple outcome tools or survey tools, pen and pencil testing that a physical therapist or an occupational therapist can do to help kind of with the outcomes with patients regarding carpal tunnel syndrome. But the big things that they've recommended is using a monofilament test where you actually have a couple prongs and you test sensory patterns on the patient's hand for somebody with carpal tunnel syndrome. Most people with CTS will have difficulty with pinching using their thumb. It's typically the thumb side of the hand. And that thumb gives us about 70% of our hand function. So to have an impairment where you're having difficulty with fine motor skills is very challenging. And that's typically what we see in our patients with carpal tunnel syndrome.
I, on the other hand, have, I think I have a little arthritis in my hand, in the fingers. You know, they're, I'm bending them now, but I feel a little pain. I mean, it doesn't, it's not a huge bother, but I'm pretty sure that a lot of people have that experience, Jill.
Absolutely. And it's, so that's another differential diagnosis that we have to consider, because there's a very common place to get arthritis in your hand. It is the carpal metacarpal joint of the thumb. And so a lot of people will end up with some arthritis at the base of their thumb, which can really lead to impaired function as well. So teasing through, is that arthritis in your thumb, or is that carpal tunnel, which is an impairment of the median nerve, or is that coming from some sort of impingement of a nerve in your neck, makes diagnosing these conditions very challenging.
Yeah, I would guess so. Well, we have some callers online. You can join in, by the way, if you have a question or comment. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Wayne in Fond du Lac has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a problem with cold hands. So I'm 66 now, and it started about 10 years ago. And if I go outside, even on a day like today, it's above freezing, my hands get cold almost instantly.
Yeah.
Does it also happen in your feet, Wayne? Have you noticed it in your feet at all?
Not as much, no.
Okay. Have you been tested, or has anybody mentioned the term Raynaud's phenomenon with you?
Right. So I talked to my doctor about that. He did not think that that's what it was, and he checked the blood flow to my hand. He said the blood flow is fine.
Hmm.
Interesting. That kind of rules and that out.
It's
any
more
other circulatory?
One hand than the other.
Any other circulatory issues on that side, Wayne, or any other problems
no,
from a circulation
not, not
perspective?
Not that I'm aware of, but it just seems more the right hand than the left hand, although I do get it in both. But they get cold so fast, I can't believe it's impossible that they can get cold that fast.
Wow.
So what strategies have you tried to deal with it? Like, how long does it stay cold? Does it get so cold that you can't function?
So what I've been doing is put hand warmers in my gloves. And so if I put gloves on and hand warmers, it's fine. But once I get them cold, say if I'm doing some work without gloves outside, once they get, it seems like once the cold air hits them, they're cold.
And so what kind of testing did your doctor do to conclude that you did not have Raynaud's? What kind of circulatory testing was done?
So he just checked by hand the blood flow, you know.
Just like manually, like did an occlusion?
On my wrist, yeah.
At your wrist?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that test is sensitive enough
right.
to rule that out.
Right, I would agree.
And you know, all that being said, if it is Raynaud's, the things that you're doing would be the things that are generally
right.
recommended for that, is figuring
yep.
out the strategies that you need to keep your hands warm, the hand warmers, extra gloves, making sure you have good gloves when you're working outside. There's not really any other interventions for Raynaud's. But in terms of other things that go wrong with your hands that result in cold hands, really there's nothing out there that I can think of. Besides Raynaud's that causes
right.
this kind of a symptom pattern.
Yeah.
Right.
So I would continue to treat it as you are. And if it continues to bother you, you could ask your doctor for a referral for a more definitive diagnosis.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure the intervention's going to change.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
particularly in the absence of any other symptoms.
Yeah.
Good luck, Wayne. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Peter in Washburn, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. Thank you. Two questions. One is, Can the symptoms of carpal tunnel, where your thumb and first two fingers get numb and stuff, can that come from an impingement in your elbow? Because sometimes I... Oh, you can. Oh, good. That's actually good news, because I get it when I hold my arm in a certain place for certain long, and I'm like, that can't be my wrist. Okay, the second one is... Know what?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's cubital tunnel. It's called cubital tunnel at your elbow.
Okay, and then can this, if I don't get this treated, although it's getting so bad I think I'm going to have to, but can it become something permanent if I let it go?
Well, if you're talking about nerve damage, yes. I mean, nerves, if you're occluding a nerve or occluding oxygen to a nerve, it can just take a really, really long time for that nerve to heal or regenerate once you take that off. So if it's getting so bad that it's really impairing your function, you should see someone. You should see a physical therapist. The median nerve can become entrapped numerous different places in your elbow, especially if you do a lot of things where you're like turning a screwdriver and doing a lot of twisting at your wrist. That would put your median nerve at risk at the elbow for injury. So you should see somebody. You should see a physical therapist or an occupational therapist that specializes in the upper quarter and see what exactly is going on. And also make sure that you don't have any impingement up in your shoulder or cervical spine as well.
Okay, makes good sense. Thank you for calling. Good luck, Peter. Thanks. Diane in Cornucopia, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. I broke my wrist about exactly a year ago and had to have surgery and some plates, et cetera, put in. It's recovered nicely, except it's on my left hand. I'm left-handed. My index finger and the next finger are still so stiff that I can't grip small things. I can't write very well because I can't close around the pen with my index finger. And when I go to pick up relatively smaller things, I can't grip it. My grip strength is getting better because I've been working on it. I went to PT for the wrist and a shoulder injury at the same time, and they gave me this putty to kind of squeeze. Is there anything else to bring back? The two fingers feel really stiff, like there's something holding back. Yeah, it doesn't truly hurt. It's just real stiff.
Okay.
So when was the last time you saw PT for this?
9 months ago.
Right. So I think it would be time to go back and revisit. So what we see with these kinds of injuries over time is that as you work through one part where you got the major motion back and the strength back in your forearm, wrist, and hand, then there's often some residual that doesn't really present until you sort of knock off the big things. And this is what's residual for you. So a couple things. One is you may need some more specific exercises for some of these specific muscles in your fingers. And the second thing is they may want to do to re-examine it, because my guess is when you fell, it's also possible that you sprained or strained some things in other parts of your hand, depending upon how you fell. But you know, but certainly the focus is on the fracture. And so they dealt with that. But now there may be some residual injury that happened there, or some scar tissue or something that's holding back that last piece of your recovery. So I would recommend going back and having an assessment now that you've dealt with, most of the strength and range of motion issues, and have them sort out what this residual piece is, and get on some specific activities to deal with that component of it.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Good sense indeed. Cynthia in Madison, it's your turn. Hi.
Hello. I know you guys are talking about hands, and I've got a problem on the opposite end. I fractured my ankle 10 weeks ago. And I have a general sort of question, though, that I think would pertain to hands. I'm now at the point where I'm supposed to be weaning myself out of my boot and learning to walk normally. And when I do that, it really, really hurts. And I'm trying to figure out if I should take the ibuprofen and just go for it, or if I should not take it and use the pain to make me rest.
That's a great question. So are you under the care of a physical therapist who's monitoring your guidance while you're weaning out of your boot, Cynthia?
Well, I saw a physical therapist once. They gave me some exercises last week that I've been doing. And, of course, the more you do them, the more you hurt. And then I'm supposed to come back in 6 weeks.
Yeah. So that I think you need some closer supervision, unfortunately. So we don't want to have you push through pain at all. First of all, that's kind of a good rule. Your body is telling you that something is not right. And to make sure your gait mechanics and everything are normal is what we'd like to do. So if you're walking and you're loading joints differently, so joints that shouldn't take load are taking it, and you're not loading other joints appropriately, you're going to learn this bad behavior, and that's going to just cause this vicious cycle of pain and inflammation. So I don't want you pushing through something. I don't want you taking ibuprofen and pushing through something. The place that would be an ideal place for you to exercise, of course, is the pool, because it'd be nice for you to kind of learn how to walk normally in an unloaded or partially loaded environment. So to get in a pool and do some rehabilitation in a pool would be ideal. So I'm not sure if you can, but I think I would be calling my physical therapy clinic back and just saying, you know, I'm not working through this. I can't wait 6 weeks. I need more direction. Can I get back in and see somebody? I'm having this pain, because we don't want you to learn a faulty pattern.
Yeah. That makes good sense. Cynthia, thank you so much for calling. Talking physical therapy, we've zeroed in a bit on hands and wrists with our two guests today, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program, and Lori Tyne-Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Natalie Guyette, our producer today, Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. So how are your hands and wrists feeling these days? Larry Mueller here. We're talking about those two parts of your body, or zeroing in at least on them. We're taking some other questions too with our two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, who come by they do a great job, come by very regularly on the show. In fact, they'll be on again next. Not sure when they're on next. We'll find out. It'll be sometime in April, I would guess. Middle of April or so. Anyway, you could join in with your comments and questions. And our lines are filled, so we'll just go back to the phones and to Bob and Claybanks next. Bob, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show. And thank you, ladies, for donating your time. I've got something on both ends. my foot, I've got an occasional pain across the knuckles on my foot, and it kind of comes and goes. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on that, anything I might be able to do about it.
When you say knuckles, what do you mean by your knuckles? Out on your toes?
Right, the joint right at the base of the toes.
Right at the base of the toes, okay. Right. Yeah, so do you have flat feet or hammer toes or anything like that?
My feet are fairly flat, but I'm 67 now, and they've never been an issue.
Okay. Have you changed your footwear at all?
No, I rotate through 4 or 5 pairs. Doesn't seem to be related to that.
Jill, maybe chime in.
Is it just the first knuckle, or is it all of them?
It's kind of the first, second, and third, I would say.
Is it? There's not a chance it's gout, is there?
No.
Is it food? No? Okay.
No.
All right.
So sometimes those joints of your foot, if you're flat-footed, are taking more load. So have you had any change in your standing, weight-bearing, walking activity in the last year because of the pandemic or otherwise?
No.
Okay. And is the pain constant, or does it come only with activity?
Just with activity. Sometimes it kind of goes away after a little bit of activity.
Yeah. And Jill?
Go ahead, Jill.
I think I'm wondering if he's just had a little bit of a collapse of his transverse arch and needs a metatarsal arch pad, one of those teardrop pads. That's probably something I would try. So if you go to your local Walgreens, yeah, something like that, you can find what's called a metatarsal pad or a metatarsal arch pad, and it's kind of teardrop shaped. And I would put that in each of my shoes and see if that makes a difference in this intermittent pain you're getting. I'm wondering if you just had a little bit of collapse over time of that arch and it's just giving you some problems. I think that'd be the most reasonable first step.
Agreed.
There you go. Yeah, there you go, Bob. Good luck. Thank you so much.
Did you have something, Christine, on the other end, Bob?
Oh, yeah, he might have. I'm sorry. Yeah, Bob, I think we may have lost him now. I think he had a shoulder issue to deal with. Well, we'll go to Christine then in Madison. Christine, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks so much for taking my call. Back at the beginning of June, my drive shaft died, and I took up riding to work. So it's about 16 miles round trip, but I'm developing pain in my thumbs, both at the base of the thumb and where further down where it joins at the wrist there. And I'm wondering if that, and I do have kind of ergonomic handlebars, but they're straight with a little bit of a kind of a cushion rest. So I'm wondering if you have exercise or stretching exercises, ideas for me about keeping that limber. I'm 61, almost 62.
So okay. The class, we talked about this sort of at the top of the show. That's a classic osteoarthritis at the base of the thumb where it attaches to the wrist. It is one of the most common places for osteoarthritis. People think of hips and knees, but the base of the thumb is one of the top places for osteoarthritis, particularly in women. So the first thing I would do is, because I think riding your bike to work is super important and a great activity, I would talk to my bike shop and reconfigure my handlebars. So find handlebars that have multiple positions so you can change your positions frequently. I would make sure I had good padded gloves. And then I would, you can do thumb exercises. If you Google exercises to strengthen your thumb and hand, there are things you can do with rubber bands. One of my favorite things is to take a newspaper, if anyone gets a newspaper yet, which I encourage people to do. If you take a big sheet of newspaper from one corner and take it in your hand and just continue to crumple it up into your hand, that's a great strengthening exercise. As is, my mother would say, washing dishes in warm water with a sponge is also good for that kind of a problem. But the key would be decreasing the load on the base of your thumb by reconfiguring your bike. That would be stop number one for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And size of the bike and the seat positioning, all that
right
comes
handlebar
into play
height
too.
Yep. Make sure you're equally distributed front to back, not too much weight bearing on your hands. All that is really important.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Christine. Well, Jim in Pembine, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Tim. It's Tim.
Oh, sorry, Tim.
Can you hear me? Yep, Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a few, couple advice things, because things that happened to me and it worked out for me. And one of the things I got for a question is, I've kind of been one of those workers that's worked hard all his life, boning beef, using a hammer, using a chisel like a woodpecker, all kinds of everything you can do under the sun. I used to swim a lot when I was a kid. That was probably the ultimate good thing I did for myself. As far as beating the body goes up. But my elbow is like clicks all the time. It wants to lock and pop. So I was wondering if there's some kind of therapy, or because I got that little ridge bone that's kind of growing out that they usually cut off, you know, when you go to cut the end off. And then I think that's pretty much like they do that with the fingers too. If your fingers are locked up, they cut right at the edges of the joints. And I guess that's kind of like a spot where the gases get caught in there, accumulated or whatever. That's what that popping sound is supposedly.
So you're getting clicking and popping. Does it ever lock at your elbow?
Sometimes it wants to lock, but not lock tight that I can't open it or anything like that. I'll feel it like it needs to be expressed, you know, sort of.
Sure. You know, chances are, given the kind of work that you've done, you have some arthritis in there. You may have some bony overgrowth because of the kind of work that you did. If you're swinging a hammer and getting a lot of impact, you can get some bony overgrowth there. You know, and unless it's really impairing your lifestyle, I really wouldn't do anything more than keep active, keep your arms strong, keep your shoulders strong, keep your elbow, wrist, and hand strong. Because there's, you know, unless it's really impairing your lifestyle, there's not a lot of upside to any surgery. In terms of therapy, we would focus on looking at your mechanics, looking at your body mechanics, looking at your posture, looking at your strength, and making sure that we can optimize sort of the infrastructure of your upper extremity to be able to maximize your function. So I think that's where I would go with that.
All right. Good luck, Tim. Thank you so much for calling. Mac from Dunn County emailed. His question relates to pain near the base of his thumbs, nagging pain, but not severe unless he grips tightly. It's on both thumbs, although more severe in the dominant hand, although the condition has not yet been diagnosed. His belief is probably basal joint arthritis. Is any PT he could be doing to both moderate the pain and slow the progression of the arthritic condition?
Yeah, he's Jill? Absolutely right. Yep, that certainly sounds like what we call basilar or base of the thumb arthritis. And as Lori had mentioned earlier, there are some exercises on the internet you can do if you just Google thumb exercises. That might be a very good thing for him to do. Warm water is usually a helpful thing. So again, doing the dishes is probably a good strategy. The one thing we didn't talk about, which a lot of people do recommend, is the use of a thumb spica or a thumb splint to wear, particularly at night. So that's another thing he can do. And if he's unsure of where to go, what to do with this, it certainly behoove him to see a physical therapist and get some recommendations on specific exercises for him, as well as recommendations on a thumb spica splint. Most people wear them at night, just to bed, and they find that that offers a lot of relief just to kind of stabilize the joint throughout the night. And then with some exercises during the day, that'd be a good strategy for him.
What is it? So the thumb splint, Does it make it rigid?
It's a very small, low profile splint that you wear at night just to kind of hold the joint in a neutral position. Because whether you know it or not, when you sleep, you kind of sleep with your thumb in an awkward position. You might curl your hand, things like that. So it just helps hold the wrist in a neutral position at night. I believe my sister wears one at night. I have one that I wear occasionally. Oh, Lori has a comment.
That's what the hand was. Yeah. There are also splints that you can use for heavy activity. So there are splints like if you're doing something and your work requires you to be using your hand for something, there are also splints that you can use for work to unload that joint, some during bouts of heavy activity. So they're not just for night, but night's a good time, a good place to start with it.
There we go. Thanks for that email. Susie in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about my adult daughter. She's in her mid-30s, the mother of a preschooler and a toddler, so a lot of lifting. Has had back and neck issues ever since she was in junior high and carried around a backpack that had too many books in it. But lately she's been having some migraine-type headaches. Once in a while, her fingers on her left hand tingle and are numb. When she sits with her children on the floor and reads, and then gets up, say, to make breakfast, she's dizzy for longer than just a few seconds. She's seen her primary care person who has referred her to a vestibular therapist. And I just wondered if you had any insights or what your take on that would be.
So there's a lot going on here. So first of all, is she loose jointed, hypermobile, have a lot of excessive mobility in her joints at all, Susie, where you'd put her as like super limber or anything like that?
I don't think so. She's very thin and quite athletic, very active, always has been. But I wouldn't say no. I don't think so.
Okay, because that was the first thought that kind of came to my mind, was somebody who was a little hypermobile and her migraines and her left hand numbness and tingling was maybe coming from a little bit of cervical or neck instability. That was the very first thought I had. So seeing a vestibular therapist is certainly a great idea. That's a really fine place to start. If it's not vestibular, I think seeing a physical therapist that specializes in the cervical spine might be a really good strategy. My first thought was the dizziness sounded like POTS to me. Mm-hmm. Lori, were you thinking the same thing?
Yeah, it could be POTS. Do you know if she has any blood pressure issues?
Yeah.
She never has. Her blood pressure has always been, in the mid-low range, I would say.
Right, exactly.
Right. Yep, that would be it. So it would be low blood pressure. So,
right.
Yeah, so okay. The fact that she's in the medical system is good. There are several differentials on this list given her symptoms. So you have to start somewhere with what is your most likely candidate. And so she's going to vestibular first, and they're going to look at her and say, yay or nay, this is a primary vestibular problem. And if they're saying, no, it isn't this, they're going to go down to the next thing on their differential list. So don't let that concern you. Just know that with the cluster of signs and symptoms she's presenting with, there are a number of different things, mechanical things, neck, back, cervicogenic headaches, some vascular things that happen at the base of the skull, just a number of things that could cause these signs and symptoms. And so they're going to methodically go through them one at a time. So I don't feel like she's getting bopped around from place to place, but what they're probably doing is systematically knocking off one thing at a time.
Right.
Yeah. Good approach, actually. Susie, thank you. And good luck to your daughter and to you. Harry in Soldiers Grove, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Harry.
Hello, hello. Hello, hello. I'm curious about the state of the art for an ununited scaphoid fracture.
Oh. A non-union of a scaphoid fracture. How old is this, Harry?
1987. Oh, no, yeah. 97. Excuse me, 97, yeah.
It's irrelevant.
It doesn't
Harry.
Matter.
87, 97 doesn't matter.
It's either 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. So, yeah. The issue is, are you having symptoms?
Oh, well, yeah, when I use it, it grinds and cracks and sometimes causes up, some interesting pain. So.
Yeah. I mean, that. So for the listeners, the scaphoid fracture is a fracture in one of the wrist bones, kind of at the base of the thumb. And if you fall in an outstretched hand, it's one of the important fractures to rule out. And often the fracture won't show up on the initial x-ray. So if you go in right away and get an x-ray and they say, oh, it's negative, it doesn't mean it's necessarily negative. But it's really important to watch for, because the long-term consequence of Harry's ununited scaphoid fracture is arthritis at the base of the thumb.
Right. Mm. So that bone is really close to the base of the thumb, and it's also actually essential for your wrist joint as well. So one of those things that we talked about earlier, Lori, was that brace that somebody mm-hmm. can wear for activity. And this might be something that Harry chooses to use to offer him a little bit of stability in his highly unstable joint, because mm-hmm. he's got this non-union. So that might be something I would certainly try. Yeah.
And I would stay in close contact with a wrist and hand specialist, a physician who specializes in wrist and hand, so that if there are windows of opportunity for any surgical interventions in terms of stabilization, et cetera, of your wrist, if you're developing what's called a slack wrist, that they're on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you, Harry, for calling. Miss Chris, it's your turn in Sherwood. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry, it's good to hear your voice. Don't you ever, ever quit, because you are the only hitch to the past, to the wonderful trips on the lake. And, you know, I grew up on WHA from 6 years old on when we went to a one-room school. But I am now 90, and I was, somebody said that I had rheumatoid arthritis. Well, it isn't that, it's osteoarthritis, but I have never taken medications until now, and now they don't seem to help. And if I don't stop talking, it's because once before when I talked, I wanted to have a follow-up question, and I never got to it. So I thought, if I don't say everything I want to say at first, you'll never let me go on again. But I have had several bad problems in my life. I had an AC separation when I was bike riding with Dr. Hayden. I had a rotator. Yeah. Can you imagine? The family had brought out a three-speed bike. They all rode the bike. And I didn't ride a bike because I could ride a horse 1 foot on the top, but I was fearful of bikes. Well, I got on this three-speed bike, and he said, well, it's all downhill. I'd have been better off if it had been all uphill. Right. I went about a block, flipped over, and went into a ditch. And the good doctor said, he said, I had one of those when I was in the service. The only difference is that the pain was so bad I passed out. And then I realized that women can take a little more pain than men, but that's beside the point. I had a rotator cuff tear at school, carrying some books, and I broke my back, or splintered it, years ago, showing a kid he could go downhill on a little sled without hurting himself. Well, other than those things, and I've had carpal tunnel, but that's, I have always been able to think away anything that I've had. Thank you to the FIAD department at Wisconsin when I was 19 and transferred into Madison. I had to take a fourth of a credit in something called relaxation in the FIAD department, where we would go to the top of the hill, lie down flat on our backs, do deep breathing, and make every bit of our body float away. I practiced that all my life, and when I would have any pain, I would think it away, but I can't think the pain away that I have now. I have some, I don't know, cancer of some sort, lymphoma, but that doesn't bother me. But this arthritis in my right shoulder, in my left shoulder, a speck in my back, but up in my neck, there is a pinched nerve. I go to water torture every morning at 5 a.m. I go to the pool and on the treadmill because the doctor said, if you don't keep moving, it'll freeze. Now, those are my problems that I have. I take gabapentin and Tramadol, and they don't seem to do any good. I hate taking medicines. I never did before. I just take them and get the prescription and line them up. I showed my doctor about 60 bottles of pills that had been prescribed over the years. But now I need them. And I think I'm almost ready to shut up and see if you can say something to help.
Oh, Chris, thank you. So let's see. Jill, you want to... Or no, let's go to Lori. Lori, go ahead.
So what a great history there, Chris. So I appreciate that you hate medication. You know, the gabapentin and the tramadol, if you feel like they're not doing anything, talk to your doctor.
Right.
You know, one of the ways I have patients try to figure out if it works is sometimes they stop taking it and they see if they feel any better or not. So you can try that. You can talk to your doctor. You can talk to your pharmacist about these medications and whether or not they're doing anything to help. I am a strong believer in that water torture that you're doing every morning at 5:30 a.m. because given the laundry list of things you have given us, the pool is the best place for you to be. You know, you would otherwise spend your day doing a set of exercises for your shoulder, a set of exercises for your other rotator cuff tear, a set of exercises for your carpal tunnel, a set of exercises for your back. Although the things you need to do for your back, you probably can't do because your shoulder and your wrist hurt. So then you can't get in the positions you need to do those things. Thus, the pool is the best place for you to be. Everything that's submerged underwater gets resisted. So the things you need to watch are being careful not to overwork your shoulders so you create pain. One of the great things to do to strengthen your shoulders, wrists, and hands is just to walk in the pool, holding your arms in a stable position. So if you have your arms straight down at your side, palms forward, thumbs out, and walk forward and backward, you're going to get resistance to the muscles from your shoulders all the way down to your fingertips. Without a lot of movement at that joints, which is what tends to flare up your arthritis symptoms. It's also good for your neck because your neck has to stabilize and hold and support your shoulders as the water gives them resistance. You're also getting resistance to your core muscles, your abdominals, your back, and the muscles in your legs as you do that activity. So that simple activity alone will help address many of the things that you have going on. Staying active is going to be the most important thing for you because that movement is what lubricates your joints. It's what gives your joints their nutrition when you're 90 years old. So keep doing the things that you're doing.
And good luck, Chris. Thank you so much for calling. Always good to hear your voice. Thank you. Well, I'll tell you what, we are having a lot of good questions here today on the Ideas Network. We've zeroed in a little on the hands and wrists, but taken other questions as well with our two guests, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network, taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Lori Tine-Brody and Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, are both with the University of Wisconsin. Lori's a physical therapist, athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Barb in Wabino, Wisconsin, up next. Hi, Barb. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to add one more suggestion of something that's really worked for me for my osteoarthritis of my thumb. I had it diagnosed probably 4 years ago by a hand surgeon. And the day after, one of my nursing friends, I'm a retired RN, said, why don't you try some glucosamine with chondroitin? Or try some hyaluronic acid. And I've tried both of those products, and I have not had to have any surgery for my osteoarthritis in my thumb. And I do not have any pain at all after taking both of these. And when you mentioned lubing your joint, I think that's what these over-the-counter medications are doing for me. What's your opinion on those kind of drugs?
So that's a great question, and I'm so glad you asked. So traditionally, what we know is that the glucosamine typically is most beneficial if it is taken in combination with the chondroitin. And I'm curious, Barb, how long you had to take it before you saw some benefits, because a lot of people report that they have to take it for about 3 months before they see any benefits. So did you notice how long you had to take your glucosamine and chondroitin prior to seeing the benefit?
I take one every day.
Right, but how long were you taking them? How long were you taking it before you felt that it helped?
I took one pill twice a day for a week and then one every day after. And I would say within 2 weeks, my pain was gone.
Okay. So there's anecdotal evidence for the support of glucosamine and chondroitin. One of the things we always recommend to our listeners is that prior to adding this medication, even though it is not a prescription medication, you should check with either your physician or your pharmacist to make sure that it doesn't have any negative interactions with that. So the research behind it is somewhat controversial. There are some studies that report that it is highly effective and other studies that report that it is not. I tell my patients it's worth a try. Make sure you clear it with your physician and or pharmacist prior to adding it to your regimen. And if you do have good relief, and it sounds like you did, Barb, that was the only thing you added to your equation per se. So you kind of can attribute the benefits or the fact that you're feeling better to this medication. It sounds like it worked for you. For some people it does, some people it doesn't. I say it's worth a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much, Barb, for calling. Russ in Stoughton, we'll go to you next. Russ, hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning. I'm 74 years old and probably on and off for the last 15 or 20 years. I get what I believe is described as trigger finger. Sometimes your forefinger and your thumb lock up into what would be, looks like a pretend gun. Sometimes it happens while I'm just sitting watching TV, but most often it will come while I've been driving a long time, towing my boat, holding on to the steering wheel with two hands. It only happens in my right hand, and it doesn't go away until it wants to go away. So it can't really hold on the steering wheel with your other three fingers. Sometimes I'll take my hand off and just let it try and relax. And then, you know, sometimes it will go away and it'll come back in 2-3 minutes. I'm wondering, you know, what causes that?
All right. Jill?
Yep, I can answer that for you, Russ. So more than likely what you're describing is trigger finger. It's most common in the ring finger in males, and typically in their 40s and 50s. So you said you've had this for 20 years, so it probably started in about your 50s. What happens is there's a nodule on one of your flexor tendons, and it has to slide under a pulley right where you kind of wear a ring per se, and it gets caught. And so when it slides under there, it gets caught and it can't slide back the other way. So treatment for it is you can start with a corticosteroid injection in there. Sometimes you have to have two injections before you see any relief. And then the third thing is to go in there and kind of release that nodule. And I will tell you anecdotally, my husband, who is 50, had a trigger finger, and he's a physical therapist as well. So works, does a lot of manual therapy. He felt a little bit improvement after the first steroid injection. Second steroid injection didn't help very much. Ended up having it released and had a great outcome because it was impacting him as well. But typically when you do a lot of gripping or use your hands a lot, you get some inflammation going there and that nodule gets stuck as it slides under your pulley. So that's a trigger finger.
There you go. Thank you so much, Russ, for calling. Jim in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello, thank you. I have developed a hitch in my wrist when I want to turn my hand over, and I'd like to know if there's anything I can do.
What do you mean when you say a hitch?
Just by my hand being thumb in, and I want to bring the thumb up and over to the outside. Sometimes there's a pain in the wrist that, you know, makes me stop, and I have to readjust my hand to avoid that pain.
Okay. Have you ever had an injury to that wrist and hand?
I'm pushing 70. I'm not going to say no, but I don't remember.
So occasionally, this happens occasionally. Is that right?
Just on occasion. It's been going on for about 6 months now. I'd say maybe once a day, maybe every other day sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay. So you know, chances are you have a little bit of arthritis in there. You may have a little bit of instability if you have an old injury in there. So like it sometimes at your scaphoid and lunate junction, you can get a little bit of instability if you've had a fall on an outstretched hand at some point. And then, you know, at some point age just sort of catches up with it. So you go along for a while and it's fine. And then either as a result of aging or as a result of a change in activities that you're doing, the wrist, it just catches up with it. So, you know, you can go see a physical therapist or a certified hand specialist and have them take a look at it and see if there's anything they would recommend. So if it's an issue of some instability, they might recommend some strengthening and some stabilization exercises. They may recommend a splint. It's really hard to do things that use like a splint when your symptoms are only occasional and you don't know when it's going to happen.
Right.
So the typical interventions we would use for something like a little bit of wrist instability, which is what it sounds like, either a little bit of instability or a little bit of arthritis, is the no one wants to wear a brace all day for something that happens only occasionally. So, you know, the best strategy would be to see somebody for a couple visits, get a more clear diagnosis, potentially some exercises you can do to help minimize those occasional setbacks.
There you go. Thank you, Jim, so much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today, physical therapist. Lori is Jill's an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Lori, a physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Take a quick look at the news, and then we will be back with our guests. Stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. The Larry Mueller Show is in full swing here with our two guests, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. We've talked about a variety of things, zeroed in a bit on hands and wrist issues, but we can take other issues as well and callers online. So let's go back to the phones. Matthew in Warren, Illinois, will give you a chance. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Larry. Thank you very much for having me on. I always enjoy listening when your guests are on the show. I'm 58. I'm very active. I did my last Ironman 5 years ago now, but I managed to tear my rotator cuff last year, right about the beginning of September, and I was not really pushing it at the time, and the surgeon said, that's not what ripped it. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. You have a lot of old injuries in there, and when he went in and put it together, he said that instead of being able to suture the tendon on, they couldn't pull enough, so they had to use what they called suture tape. So That was only 3 weeks ago, and he wants me to keep stretching the arm. I don't lift it under its own power. I use the other arm to lift it up from the shoulder. I keep my elbow otherwise tucked by my side, and I just use my biceps to move the hand and try not to lift anything above about a pound. But he wants me to walk my hand up a wall to keep it loose. But I can get to about 135 degrees, and after that, I get a lot of pain all the way down into the bicep. And I don't obviously want to destroy his work or damage the tape. But he said to me a few times, look, the pain is only in the head. I want you to keep working on this. And from the post-operative meeting I had to him, he says, when I see you in a month, which is coming up in a week, I want you to be able to move your arm, which I can. I can get it much further than before, but I don't know how much should I be pushing it this early in the game.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so it sounds, Matthew, like if they had to use some tape to kind of Humpty Dumpty your rotator cuff back together, you probably had a lot of arthritic changes in the tendon. It was probably pretty fibrotic. And so that's why they had to kind of put a extra piece in, if you will, to kind of sew things back together. Having said that, that probably means that your joint itself was probably a little arthritic as well. So are you seeing a supervised physical therapist during this time frame? Because if you aren't, you should. And I know that there's arguments from orthopedic surgeons that, well, I don't want them doing exercises. I don't want them doing this. I just want them doing passive range of motion. But that's still an excellent time to see a physical therapist, because if you're the reason you may be having pain when you crawl up the wall to 135 degrees, by the way, it isn't really that passive. If you want it to be passive, crawling up a wall with your hand isn't that passive. It could be because you need a little bit of movement of the joint itself. And so seeing a supervised physical therapist for some really good, or seeing a physical therapist for supervised rehab would be a really good strategy, I think. Lori?
Absolutely. And these questions that you have, when you only see your provider once every 4 to 6 weeks, and you have all these questions in between, having regular contact with a provider can help guide you as to what is the right pain to have. So both Jill and I professionally hate crawling up the wall exercises.
Yes.
Because it is not passive, and because what you end up doing is creating impingement in your shoulder, and you can create back pain because the way you get your arm up the wall is by leaning backwards. It is not a great way to do passive overhead stretching. There are way better ways to do that, and a physical therapist could guide you in the better ways to do that and to help you understand what is okay pain and not okay pain. So I would strongly encourage you to have regular contact with a physical therapist during this process. You are far too active and too young to have this not work out for you.
Absolutely.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Lisa in Beaver Dam, it's your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about Kienbach disease. I had a wrist injury about 5 years ago, and I went to an orthopedic doctor in Portage, and he told me that he said, surprisingly, it looks like you have Kienbach disease. And I didn't ask a whole lot of questions about it at the time, but my question, and he also said that it's hereditary, like a Western European kind of genetic thing, but from what I've read, that's not necessarily so. But my question is, my brother Scott's 2 years younger than I am. He's 58, and he's having surgery on his right hand and his ulna nerve. Like, they're rearranging his ulna nerve, and they said he's got carpal tunnel in his wrist. And I had mentioned to him something about this Kienbach disease, and maybe he could mention it to his doctor. Is there any correlation? My mother also had her ulna nerve rearranged. I don't know if that's the proper term, but is there any correlation between that ulna nerve and this wrist thing?
I don't think so. The ulnar nerve transposition is called a transposition, but you're pretty darn close. Are they moving that at the elbow? Because that's typically where the transposition occurs.
I would think so, because he had real bad elbow pain.
Yeah. Then that's what they're doing. So they're doing an ulnar nerve transposition at his elbow. So Kienbach's disease is avascular necrosis. Correct me if I'm wrong, Lori.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Of the lunate.
Yes, of the lunate. And so one of your bones in your wrist, one of your key wrist carpal bones, ends up not getting good blood supply and becomes kind of necrotic. I don't know that there's a correlation between that and ulnar nerve issues at all. I can't imagine there would be. And I have not heard that there's a hereditary component to it. It's one of those rare birds that you don't see very often in your career as a physical therapist, somebody who's got Kienbach's.
I think the only correlation between the ulnar nerve and Kienbach's would be an overuse, because the wrist is not working like it's supposed to, and you are substituting at the elbow, and therefore annoy your ulnar nerve. That'd be the only relationship that I could see, would be mechanical.
Agreed.
Mm. All right. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it. Joanne in Neshkoro, your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Well, I just want to encourage anybody that thinks they're having carpal tunnel to go to their therapist first. Many, many years ago when I broke my wrist, I had a regular cast on it. And so when I went back to the surgeon to get the cast off, I was telling him I was having these problems, thinking it was carpal tunnel. He says, well, you just get a wrist brace and wear it at night, and this might stave off surgery for a little while. When I went to the occupational therapist, I told them the problem, and they said, oh, here are these exercises that you should do, which I did faithfully, and I never had to have any surgery, and I had two friends with the same kind of problem, and I gave them those same exercises, and they never had surgery either. So you know,
yeah.
A surgeon.
Right. The other thing, when that an occupational therapist or a physical therapist can do is help you with ergonomic tools. And I think that's one thing we haven't really talked about relative to the wrist and hand. And that is, you know, if you are, you know, I'm currently seeing somebody who's a chef. And so if you're having wrist and hand problems, making sure you have ergonomic tools. They make ergonomic gardening tools and all kinds of home use tools that are ergonomic and will decrease the stress on your wrist and hand. So you're right. Before you jump into surgery, using all those strategies that Jill has mentioned, the wrist brace, the splint, and then seeing your therapist for, you know, discussion about how to modify some of your work environment. And using the right tools and things like that to decrease the stress can certainly prevent or delay any kind of surgical intervention.
Yeah. Joanne, thank you so much. Appreciate it. A listener emailed who is in their 60s, works in healthcare. Over a year ago, a patient aggressively grabbed their non-dominant hand and wouldn't let go for a while. Now the area below their thumb, but before the wrist, gives them pain at times. They say they could plunge it into a paraffin bath, it might feel better. Any suggestions? It happens about once a week and lasts about 15 minutes.
Ooh. Well, there are so many ligaments that connect all of those small bones in our hands together. And I'm wondering if that tight squeeze healthcare professional experienced perhaps subluxed a bone or something like that and caused some ligamentous instability in their wrist. That's kind of the first thing that comes to mind for me, Lori.
And if this person works in healthcare, I would certainly have it examined by a physical therapist or occupational therapist that specializes in hand, particularly as a healthcare worker. Using your hands and having hand function is so important, and it may be manageable now, but you don't want to end up, you know, like Harry down the road with his, 20 or 30 year old non-union scaphoid fracture and having symptoms. So hand use, particularly around the thumb, is so critical to function in life that getting those issues dealt with early and understanding what's going on and what the prognosis is critically important.
A caller who couldn't stay on the line had a question about wrist flexion, like you need to do a push-up. He says he no longer has the ability to push his wrist like that, like when you're doing a push-up. Any thoughts as to why that might happen?
So I'm pretty sure he means wrist extension, and that's okay. So if you get up in a push-up position and you do that, the first thing that comes to mind for me is just some arthritic changes in their wrist, and that they have, you know, that joint is compromised a little bit. And when you ask to load that joint, i.e. during a push-up, and you get a lot of compression and try to extend it, that could be problematic. I mean, as we age, we all lose a little bit of range of motion, so that could be part of it. And Lori has something else to say.
So for me, the first thing that I think of when someone can't load in a push-up position is an unresolved scaphoid fracture.
That's true too. Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know if there's any history of wrist injury there, either recently or remotely, where he could be a Harry.
He could be a Harry.
You could be a hairy and have an unresolved scaphoid, because that's one of the classic signs that we look for in someone with a scaphoid fracture, is that they can't bear weight in a push-up position. Or if it's someone, if he's very active, you know, and he's been doing a lot of bench pressing, that could be it also. But also the arthritis of the base of your thumb that you mentioned. So again, get it checked out, because thumb function is really important.
Yep.
A listener emailed who has neuropathy in both their hands from chemotherapy. Are there physical therapy options for somebody in this position?
So that's very challenging. I know that the neuropathy impairs hand function quite a bit. I don't know that there's anything specific other than some mobility exercises, making sure that you maintain strength. And then the other thing would be, as you talked about earlier, Lori, would be potentially the use of some sort of ergonomic devices that make the hands a little bit more functional. I don't know that there's anything specifically from a pain perspective that can manage the neuropathy. So perhaps a 1 or 2 time visit with a PT or OT to make sure that they maintain good function, and discuss the use of adaptive equipment to make their activities of daily living a bit more functional.
Chuck in Minnetonka, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, Larry. That's Minnetonka, but
oh, sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm within listening distance. Thank you. You had a caller earlier who talked about suffering, and you mentioned hand cold, inability to tolerate pain, and you mentioned Raynaud's disease. Well, I have the same issue, and instead, my doctor suggested, because I've worked outside for many years, I'm 64, that I probably have hand and foot neuropathy, and so the only thing that I was prescribed at the time, other than inserts for my feet, was gabapentin, and I'm still working, and that stuff puts me to sleep. Is there anything else that you might suggest?
Yeah, that's the challenge with gabapentin, is typically when you have to take a high enough dose to see the effectiveness on your nerves, it does have a very sedative effect to it. I don't know if there's a different medication, Lori, that people will try in addition to gabapentin.
No, but some of the people I see who take gabapentin take it only at night because of its sedative effect, and then they don't take it during the day. So, so that's the big go-to for neuropathy. I would check with your doctor, check with your pharmacist, because they're the real specialists in the pharmaceutical category. But in terms of the patients that I see with neuropathy, gabapentin is number one. So you could talk to your physician about alternative dosing strategies to maybe load it a little more at the end of the day and not take it during the day, and see if that works for you.
Yeah, that might be a solution. Good luck, Chuck. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that insight.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Judith in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Judith.
Hi. It's been recommended that I have hip replacement surgery. I'm not quite ready to do that yet, and I'm considering hyaluronic acid injection in my hip joint. Can you speak to that? What would be the drawback to that? Is that an okay kind of temporary thing while I wait to see if hip replacement is necessary?
Well, if you're like Larry, you'll get it done and you'll just keep waiting and never have surgery.
Exactly.
That's what happened to Larry.
Yep,
that's
except
exactly
that was
what happened to me.
Yeah.
I was so glad I got those shots.
There's not a big downside to it. So if it can prolong your activity, if it can delay your hip replacement and potentially minimize your symptoms enough to where you can really get in some good physical therapy. Sometimes the pain that you have from the joint itself really slows down your ability to do the physical therapy interventions that you need. So it's certainly worth a try. And Jill has something to add.
And the only thing I will say from a research perspective is the research regarding hyaluronic acid injections and its benefit is much more robust at the knee than it is at the hip. That's not to say it's ineffective at the hip. There's just more research at the knee, and we know the chances of it working are better at the knee than the hip, but it's certainly worth a shot, pun intended.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say.
Absolutely. Probably about three shots, two or three, yep. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a series.
It depends.
It depends on the brand and how it's dosed. It used to be that the only thing we did was a 5 series, and then there's a 3 series, there's a 2 series. So it depends on the brand, the manufacturer, and all those things. Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely worth a try. For sure. I had mine about, 10 years ago or whatever, and I'm still going just fine.
And just as an aside for the listeners, a hyaluronic injection, a hyaluronic acid injection is not the same as a cortisone injection.
Right. They're very different.
Yeah.
Judy in Oconomowoc, hello.
Hi. About 6 weeks ago, I experienced pain in my lower shoulder. It wasn't in the upper part of my shoulder, but the lower part of my shoulder. And I after I had done some exercises in floor yoga. We had done an upper body thing, and not that day, but the next day it started. So I tried several things. I have a cream that I put on for muscle soreness, and I tried a little bit of heat, and I tried a little bit of ice, but not too much. And then I talked to my general practitioner, and she said, you know, put ice on 3 times a day. And she said, I could take ibuprofen tablets, you know, once a day or twice a day. So I tried that. The ice worked really well. It did take down the inflammation, maybe. I'm not sure, but it did feel better. And the ibuprofen worked, you know, for me to sleep at night. And then she said I could contact the office and get a physical therapist. So I have been doing physical therapy for 3 weeks, and it has helped to a certain extent, but not really. I cannot sleep on that side, and I still I don't, you know, it isn't like it's incapacitating me, because I am doing just about, except for yoga, I've been doing just about everything I do, except it does hurt. And I'm just wondering if I need to get an MRI to know exactly what's going on or what I should do next.
We've got about another minute or so here for a response.
So when you say lower shoulder, where is that specifically?
Well, it's kind of, I don't know how to explain it. It's kind of in the, when I stretch my hand to my back, it's kind of about where my hump is. It's a kind of about 2 inches below that.
In your shoulder, upper back?
In
back
my shoulder.
Or the front?
No, in the front. In the front of the shoulder.
Oh, long head of the biceps.
It sounds like biceps.
Long head of the biceps. You probably ruptured the long head of your biceps. And so have your physical therapist take a look at that. And you shouldn't need an MRI. A good clinical exam should be able to figure that out. But, yeah, it's almost sounding like a rupture of the long head of your biceps.
Or just a really bad tear, irritation, partial rupture, something like that.
Yep. So. Yep, exactly. Yeah. So have your PT look at that. But I don't think imaging is in order yet.
Nope.
And thank you very much for calling. And Jill and Lori, thank you both so much. We'll look forward to your visit sometime around the middle of April, I believe. It's always fun. Thanks. Thanks very much. Jill Tynesimam, Associate Professor at UW-Madison. Lori Tynebrody, Physical Therapist, Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. They'll be back in April, and we'll talk with them again. Tomorrow, our tax expert, Mary Mellum, joins us to answer all of your tax questions and talk about some of the recent tax changes. In the meantime, thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.